moving into like hustling healthy, like I don't feel guilty when I take time out. I've gotten really good with being like, I'm so overwhelmed right now. You know what? I'm good for today. Like, I've done my work for today and I will allow myself a break.
Hey, welcome to the Current Mood podcast. This is your host, Jacqueline Marie.
Current Mood is a series exploring self-care techniques, mental models, and core patterns propelling our increasingly digital lives. Through conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, educators, and executives across creative disciplines, I get a chance to learn about things that work for people in their everyday lives. In this next conversation, I got a chance to sit down with Sarah Nguyen, the founder of Nguyen Coffee Supply. We had a super deep conversation, very spirited. Sarah's amazing. We talked about building a business in a new industry, kind of why hustle porn is trash, you know, the whole like never not working thing, recognizing the need to slow down and disconnect, and super important, Sarah also schooled me on immigration history of Asian Americans in the U.S., like specifically from a first-generation female perspective. Really important stuff, and I'm very thankful that she was able to break it down in a very clear way. So we had a really awesome talk. I am here with Sarah Nguyen, and we're going to talk about some fun stuff today.
Yes,
welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes. Oh, I like your podcast voice.
Oh, you like this podcast voice. This just reminds me of the episode you had with Jerome Hollis. And I was like, I always sound cooler on a microphone with a volume and bass turned up like all the way.
Everyone does.
Kinda. Yeah. Yeah.
Is your mom an entrepreneur?
Yeah. So both my parents are entrepreneurs and self-made business owners. However, I never really looked at them in that framework until recently. I used to think they were like, oh, workers or like manual laborers because they worked with their hands. Like my mom works and owns and works in the laundromat, and my dad owns and works in his floor sanding company. Mm-hmm. So like growing up, it wasn't like a sexy job, you know? but you know, looking back, they still own their businesses and both of their businesses survived the recession.
Yeah.
And they've able to like build their lives on like their businesses. And so they actually have a lot of like, I think, business acumen and smarts to an extent. I have a funny story about my dad if you want to hear it later, but to an extent, they're not
tech savvy. Of course,
I want to
hear a funny story about your parents.
Yes. But they know they're pretty smart when it comes to like, I think, dealing with people and like how to run a business and think about ops. But I have noticed, so I go to them a lot and I value their advice. But then when we get into the range of like technology, I start to see the limitations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Generation gap.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So, what kind of business are you in?
So, last November, I launched Nguyen Coffee Supply, which is a coffee company and a lifestyle brand that's focused on importing, roasting, and distributing Vietnamese coffee beans.
I love coffee so much.
I know. I'm drinking some coffee right now. Yeah.
How does it compare?
It's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly... So I'm not a coffee snob at all.
Like, with Bodega Coffee?
I fuck with Bodega Coffee. I mean, that's like the OG. Like that's the coffee. That's like the foundation of my coffee experience. You know, Bodega Coffee, Dunkin' Donuts, like even Maxwell and Folgers. Like that. I mean, it's also like an access thing.
I grew up on that shit.
Yeah,
we had like the MJB.
Yeah,
my mom would send me in the store, get the MJB European roast.
Yeah, or like the Bustelo. And I think like aside from, you know, the quality, transparency, like I think the profile of like that really nutty, dark, bold is like very nostalgic. And that's how I understood coffee growing up. So, yeah. And so I love all types of coffee. Like I can drink a cup coffee that's like brewed down to the precision of like exact grams, or I can even drink a packet of instant coffee that's like what's in front of me, you know? Like I'm
no discrimination.
Yeah, no discrimination. Like coffee should not be an elitist, classist, hierarchical thing. It's just like to each their cup. Yeah.
To each their cup.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I like that. To each
their cup. Yeah.
Okay.
There's just no need for this like coffee shaming that kind of has been floating around in this whole third wave specialty coffee movement, which I'm about.
Yeah.
I'm a part of it and I'm building upon it. Mm-hmm. I like to think that we're at the forefront of the next wave, call it fourth wave or whatever. But all of that aside, like, I'm not about the culture shaming. I mean, I'm not about the coffee shaming part of it.
Yeah.
You know, where folks come in, like when I was doing Cafe Fiend, our 4-month pop-up for New Coffee Supply, folks would come in and they'd be like, oh my gosh, please don't judge me. I don't know anything about coffee. Like, I don't know the right grind size, the brew size. And I was like, whoa, like, where is that even coming from?
You know,
like,
don't judge me?
Yeah. They really felt, and that's them absorbing this culture of elitism of like, if you don't know the right way to drink coffee, then you're not like a real, a serious coffee drinker. And I was like, hey, no judgment. Like, it's all good. You don't need to feel embarrassed or ashamed if you don't know anything about coffee. Like, there's really no right or wrong way to drink coffee. Like, we have brew guides and we do need to scale at the shop and we do have, you know, exact measurements, but that's just for like consistency.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to like how you want to enjoy your cup of coffee, like, there's just no judgment and there's no right or wrong way to do it. Like, mm-hmm. however you want to brew it is how you want to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's like actually such a good point because for people who don't drink coffee and maybe they don't think about that, like my friend and I were making plans for this weekend and we're mm-hmm. like, oh, let's go have breakfast. He's like, well, I don't drink coffee. So like, I don't know where you're going to like, if the place is going to be good enough for you.
Yeah.
And then it's even like on the other side too.
Oh, wow.
I'm just like you get shamed by your homies too. I'm like, dog.
Like backhanded. Shaming.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't care. Like I'll go to the bodega and get, that's what tripped me out when I would come visit New York is like, you go into the bodega. I don't know if they still do this, but they would give you the coffee in the morning and like everyone goes on the train, they put it in a bag.
Huh.
That shit was weird to me.
Wait, what do you mean?
Like they give you the to-go coffee in like the Greek cup or whatever. Yep. And then they put it in like a little sandwich bag and just give it to you.
That's
like,
so cute.
I know. I was like,
I've never seen that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that was like.
I usually just hold a cup.
Right. Same. But like the few times I had done that, this is like years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe they're like, oh, we're wasting too much paper.
Yeah,
I don't know, but anyway, yeah, coffee shaming happens from other sides too.
Yeah,
homie to homie shame,
and I think that's just really like I think everyone is kind of like processing this culture that's being put out there about like a hierarchy of coffee.
Well, it's like the luxury goods. I feel like kind of like that luxury idea. It's like there's this whole other breed of stuff that you could maybe have access to it, but
yes.
If you don't have access to it, you don't know the right discourse or the language that goes with it. So,
right,
like,
exactly.
You're not welcome.
Right. Or, like, you're not doing it right.
Right.
Or you're not, like, the standard of a coffee drinker.
Ooh.
Right. I was doing this shoot yesterday with Food 52, and we have the same conversation. And, like, even all the tools, you know, that we were using, like, we had, like, a really fancy scale and, like, all these measurements and a fancy grinder. And that's, like, also an issue of access, you know? So
hey, that's just expensive.
It's so fucking expensive. And it's like, what, now everyone needs to buy a scale to make their coffee? Like, listen, that's, if you're about precision, like, go for it. But if you don't have a scale, if you don't want to use a scale, it's all good.
Use
like,
your
it
hand.
Isn't. Use what?
Use your hand.
Use your hand. Yeah. Use a noodle spoon, a soup spoon, a tablespoon. Like, it doesn't make you any less of a coffee drinker.
How dare you?
I know, right?
God.
You can't spend $200 on the scale to make your coffee.
Wow. Yeah. What's your sign?
I'm a Virgo.
What's your sign, girl?
I'm a Virgo. My birthday twin's Beyonce. I was just throwing out there because it's kind of like when I found out Beyonce was my birthday twin, it actually made me lose motivation in life.
Oh my God.
Because I was like, even if I don't try that hard, I'll probably be okay. Because I'm like aligned with Beyonce's stars.
Sick. Oh
my God. Like if I just get like an ounce of Beyonce's like energy, I'll be fine.
You're like the just maybe the third guest that has like brought up Beyonce.
I love her.
Everyone loves her.
That's my birthday bae.
We love you.
Yes.
She's the best. Anyway, so I want to get into, I mean, you talked a little bit about coffee and kind of like what you do. Like, how did you get to where you are now? Like, what was the journey that brought you here to New York?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, you want to talk about my journey with NCS or just New York in general?
Like, what were you doing before this? Like,
yeah. Okay, so, I mean,
because you weren't always a coffeepreneur, coffee entrepreneur. Is there a word for that?
Coffeepreneur. I like that, actually. Coffeepreneur. No, I was not. And actually, before I launched New York Coffee Supply, I never worked in the coffee industry.
Yeah.
Or a cafe. I worked as a server and hostess in a restaurant, but not in a cafe. And I've never worked in the whole importing exporting game. Right. But before we go into that, so I've been in New York since 2013.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so my last full-time job was 2012. And at that time, I quit my job, my 9-to-5, because I really wanted to kind of dive, like, head on into my creative career as a writer, as a filmmaker, as, you know, a creative producer, all that stuff. I love storytelling. Mm-hmm. I love telling stories, and I wanted to kind of like do that across as many platforms as I can, whether that was writing, creative writing, journalism, documentary filmmaking. So I moved to New York in 2013, and I've just been full-time freelance since then.
Just like, did you like save up money and move here? You were just like, all right, I'm going.
I saved up money to move here.
You moved from LA?
From LA, yep. Oh, okay. So I was in LA for 2 years working as the director of a writing program at UCLA. Before that, I was running a video production studio in Boston, my hometown, mm-hmm. at this organization called Artists for Humanity, which I was also a part of as a teenager. Yeah, I stacked for a few years, and nice. I always tell people, you know, folks who like want to take that leap of faith and follow dreams, I always say, like, you got to stack. Like, yeah. That is probably the first bit of advice I can give you, because if you can have a bit of a financial cushion, you can help ease yourself into that transition, whether that's coasting with that money, like that could be your runway, or using it to invest in your own ventures, which is exactly what I did with my first restaurant. And I also invested my own money into New Coffee Supply, right? Mm. So I stacked, and then I saved, and then I just started freelancing in New York City. And I've just, you know, I worked in my creative career of the last few years. I started... I was a part of opening a restaurant in Bushwick, and then I launched New Coffee Supply in 2018.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the restaurant part.
Oh, I didn't. You didn't?
No.
Oh.
I mean, that's why we're doing this, so you get to know you.
Yeah. So I was one of the four founders of Lucy's Vietnamese Kitchen.
No way.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Okay, yeah.
Or wait, is Lucy still open?
It's not.
Oh, okay, yeah. I had been there a long time ago.
Yeah, we launched, I think, I forget, it's 2014, I want to say, or 15.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that was like really like my first foray into the food and beverage scene of New York City, and this entrepreneurship in New York City, like entrepreneurship in terms of like a brick and mortar, because there's a lot of entrepreneurial skills in a freelance creative career. Mm-hmm. But Lucy's was an amazing experience. I feel like that really helped me build my network in New York City, especially because I wasn't working for a company or anything. It was really hard to kind of build relationships as a freelancer. I did that for a few years. I was like, you know, I was an owner, but I really kind of led the whole brand building and storytelling initiative with all the communications.
That's so cool.
PR.
Yeah. I'm a fan from the outside. I didn't know.
Yay. Oh my gosh. Yes. And I actually left the company in August of last year to focus full time on launching New Coffee Supply.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Sweet. It's fun. Yeah.
So like, what's that transition for you went from like film and creative stuff into like F&B, and now you're into like coffee, which is like a whole nother thing. Like, how have you navigated this like unknown kind of like new territory?
Well, the whole time I was working on Lucy's Vietnamese Kitchen, I was still building my creative career pretty heavily on the side. Mm-hmm. So those two things really worked side by side. It wasn't like film, and then I left film to go to food and beverage.
So you had like 10 jobs, like every New Yorker?
Like every New Yorker, like every full-time creative freelancer. Yeah. Just the New York hustle.
It's crazy.
Hustling out here. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah.
And I think across all three, like whether it's been my documentaries or my writing or my restaurant and now New York Coffee Supply, really the common thread across all of those is my storytelling. Mm-hmm. And it's been my passion for sharing my Vietnamese culture. Mm-hmm. It's been my passion for uplifting my community and working to bring more visibility and representation to my community and just generally folks that are considered like on the margins or underrepresented, right? It's all about amplifying the stories from my own experience and also the experience of my community members in a way that's like very accessible, right? Whether it's film or restaurant or coffee.
Yeah.
So I think like, yeah, like the medium looks different, like between film, articles, restaurant, and coffee. But if you really look at what like my body of work, it's all very, very similar. Like my passion has always been rooted in how to empower or help amplify the Vietnamese American / Asian American community and also working towards building a more equitable and just world.
Can I have your autograph? That's so... That's like, it just makes my heart feel good.
Oh, yay. Thank you.
So what are the kind of like two or three core things that people don't know about Vietnamese Americans? Because I feel like that's you don't hear much about Vietnamese Americans.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, I grew up, right. I had like quite a few Vietnamese friends growing up. So like, I know a couple things, but I mean, I don't know much. And I think a lot of people don't really know much about Vietnamese culture in America.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. That's a really great question. I'm just going to reel it back a little bit to maybe just the Asian American community. And then I'll talk about the Southeast Asian American community. Then I'll talk about the Vietnamese American community. So, you know, when I was in high school, as a teenager, I got really involved in youth activism. I was really fortunate to find a home in a youth-run, youth-led social justice group called the Coalition for Asian Pacific American Youth that was housed at UMass Boston inside the Asian American Studies program. So that was really like my first exposure to ethnic studies, Asian American studies, social movements, you know, the civil rights movement, the Black Panther Party. And I had a lot of mentors that were professors and also program coordinators on the university campus, right? So activism, social justice, community empowerment has always been like a strong foundation in my life, in the work that I do. And for me, you know, as an Asian American, a Southeast Asian American, and then a Vietnamese American, so these are the kind of the layers of my identity within the umbrella of Asian America. And with that, entering the space of talking about social justice or racial justice, as an Asian American, you know, and a lot of members of my community, we always feel really left out in the conversation around race or racial justice and racial equity. We live in a very binary world, you know, and race, of course, is becoming more nuanced. But for a lot of it, it feels like a very dichotomous conversation. And so Asian Americans are, you know, we feel left out of it and we feel invisible. I mean, even down to like the facts around data aggregation, a lot of like data around housing, around employment, around education just isn't aggregated for the Asian American, let alone the Southeast Asian American community. So even in those conversations around policy and data, we're invisible, right? So we're invisible there, then we're going to be invisible in the conversation about like racial justice as an overarching conversation. So what don't people know about Vietnamese Americans? So, well, first, I'll start by saying that I think, you know, as a Southeast Asian American, right? So within the Asian American conglomerate or umbrella, we have East Asians, we have South Asians, we have Southeast Asians, and all of our experiences culturally very different. We all represent different countries. And then I think societally and politically, our experiences in this country are very different depending on our immigration and political history, right? So depending, how did each community enter the United States? And it's always based on politics. So for example, Chinese folks first entered the United States in the 1800s because they were brought over as cheap labor to build the Transcontinental Railroad, right? And then there's, you know, what we call in American history called the brain drain. The United States was only letting like the very educated folks in like science and math from like India or like East Asia into the country. So that kind of points to a lot of the affluence in those communities. Southeast Asians, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Lao folks, you know, Hmong folks, we entered the country not because the United States wanted us for any economic reason, but because of the Vietnam War.
Right.
And because the United States'
We were seeking refuge.
And the United States played a huge role in the Vietnam War. And their acceptance, you know, of refugee resettlement was really their way of admitting their role and responsibility in the war. So once refugees from Southeast Asia settled in the United States, we were settled in very poor and impoverished and neglected neighborhoods, right? So that political history points already to like our class differences and our experiences, and also some communities, you know, historically East Asian, South Asians have been here for multiple generations, which can point to the economic growth or, you know, economic growth in this country. Southeast Asian, Vietnamese Americans, we've been here for one generation. Like my parents my parents were the generation that came here, right? And my parents were the generation who left their country by boat Mm-hmm. They escaped their country by boat, ended up in a refugee camp, and then came here. So that speaks to a lot of, like, the intergenerational knowledge and wealth that we have or don't have. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so the first thing I'd say is, one, the Vietnamese American community is here because of the United States' involvement in the Vietnam War. The Vietnamese community that's here is largely a refugee community that is a part of an experience called the Boat People Movement, meaning they escaped their country by boat. Mm-hmm. And the Vietnamese American community... is a very young community, you know, meaning my parents just are the first ones to come here. So there's a lot of learning, a lot of growth that we're still doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you for all of that. That was a great history lesson for myself.
Thanks for asking.
And probably some other people listening, because that's not stuff that we learn in history class.
Not at all. Yeah. We just kind of get clumped into one.
Yeah. So taking those perspectives, like, how do you, if you, when you layer on top of that, being a woman in all of that, like, how does that sit with you? Or, like, how is your experience different or
in what context
impacted? I guess I would say, I mean, it's a very big question to ask how that impacts your entire life. But I would be more curious at how that impacts you as an entrepreneur, especially as somebody that's in the process of fundraising right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to get
announcement.
Super into that.
Just kidding. I'm fundraising.
Oh, wait, is that private?
No, not at all.
Okay,
no.
By the time
let
this
the,
comes
let
out.
Let the peoples know.
Yo, she's looking for
you
money.
You got checks.
Which is a huge step, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It does. It has felt like a big next stage that I'm stepping into, so thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so how does your identity as a woman, as a Southeast Asian woman, Vietnamese American, like, how does that play into what you're doing now?
Yeah, such a great question.
I know, it's very layered.
I mean, I think if we're thinking like the broader general societal context, right? Like, we're living in a system of sexism and a system of patriarchy, a system that's operated, you know, by racism. Like, given that context, like, I'm already disadvantaged in so many ways, and I'm aware of that. Like, statistically speaking, we talk about, like, the amount of, like, female-founded companies that are funded by VCs. It's, like a sliver of, like, the pie, right? But what's interesting for me is that when I assess it in, like, a cultural context, right, in terms of where we are in America right now, in a time where it's, like, everyone wants to talk about diversity. Everyone wants to talk about inclusion. Everyone wants to talk about women's empowerment. Everyone wants to talk about women's rights. And, like, people, like, you know, tend to generally surface level want to do more. So I think for me, in a cultural context, I can find unique ways to try to leverage that.
Sure.
Like, in my conversations, in my meetings, in my branding, like, because those topics right now, like, women's empowerment, you know, communities of color being uplifted, creating more opportunities for underrepresented folks, those things are kind of, I mean, I'd call them trendy, but it really just takes time to see how long this thing lasts, you know, like, see how long the gates stay open. So in that way,
till we push them down.
Yeah. So it's like, enough, right? Too many y'all up here. So in a culture context, I'm finding ways to leverage that. But for the most part, it's still hard, and it doesn't change people's perceptions necessarily when I'm having maybe a conversation with them or I'm having a meeting with them, because those ideas around sexism, you know, or racism or patriarchy, it's just very inherent in our society and people, and it takes a lot of willingness to unlearn and to break those things down.
Yeah.
So, like, even, for example, like, and let's talk about the whole importing game, right? Like, it's a very old industry. I think it's mostly, like, all, like, old money and corporations who've been around forever, and, like, they just pass it down to, like, the next generation or whatever. Like, I am coming in as, like, a solo founder, first generation Vietnamese American, female millennial, starting this industry. I mean, starting this company.
Checking all the boxes, bro.
Give me that money and checking all the boxes. Yeah. Trying to import, right? And this industry is very old. So
is it just importing into the U.S. in general, or is it importing from Vietnam that's, like...
I'm importing green beans from Vietnam
into
the United States.
Right. In terms of, like, the things you've been discovering about the importing business, is it, does it, like, Is it specifically because you're importing from Vietnam?
No, it's just the process of importing, dealing with freight forwarders and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do feel like people respond to me differently because I am a woman, especially once I hop on the phone, you know, like I kind of have a youthful voice and my energy is very youthful. So I kind of have to like tell myself to turn it down sometimes.
Don't turn it down.
Really?
No,
okay.
Just be yourself. You'll have to get over it.
But I know that I just know people treat me differently. And like and a perfect example is one of my friends who is in the industry. He's a tradesman. I was working on my last shipment from Vietnam for a container, and he was like, send me your rates. And then I was like, this is what I got. He's like, that's too high. He's like, let me ask my folks and see what I can get you. And then he like asked around and he like saved me like $1,000, right? And then
that's
he was
a
like
a lot of money as a startup.
I mean, I'm brand new.
Yeah,
they know that I don't have a lot of leverage, you know. They know that I probably don't know what I'm doing, or they know that I'm new to what I'm doing,
right.
And so he was like, yeah, in the industry we call the rate you got the housewife rate.
Bruh.
I couldn't fucking believe he said, it's the fucking housewife rate, which means you're getting fucked, right?
Is that what he said?
He didn't say that, but that's what I said. And that's what makes sense. And the sexism, the patriarchy there, you couldn't just call it like the newcomer's rate?
Yeah.
You had to call it the housewife rate.
Right.
The housewife rate.
Like, as if your job is a housewife and you have no business being there.
That's another great interpretation. Or like, yeah, exactly. And you don't know what the fuck you're doing, so you're just going to get fucked. It's disgusting.
Have you talked to anybody else about that? Like, has anybody else experienced that?
No, because I don't know anyone else doing.
Right, which is kind of cool.
I'm doing it, but.
Wow.
But that's funny. Yeah. And he's a guy. He told me that. And I was like, that's really interesting.
Well, good thing you have, like, male allies.
Yeah, I have a lot of male allies. Yes. Mm-hmm. After all that talk about patriarchy, I have a lot of male allies. I have a lot of great male mentors who have been very helpful.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
How did you just. Did they just come into your life and appear?
No, like
did you seek them out?
My current mentors in this business, like one is my brother-in-law.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, he's a tech founder. Another,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, another one is someone who's been in food and beverage who I've known since my Lucy's day. Mm. So we have like a long relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm seeking. Then there are like a few that I'm seeking out, specifically like women.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure I have a balance of like male and female mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm seeking out mentors who are actually like. They don't need to have the business experience of like food and beverage or CPGs, consumer packaged goods, but they know me really well. They know my values really well because I want to make sure I want to make sure that as I'm scaling the business, I have mentorship with folks who know me and my values and can kind of help keep me accountable to those values.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm kind of like building that portfolio of mentorship. And then my friend who's a tradesman, I got really lucky with him. I met him at an event and I'm like, what do you do? I'm a tradesman. I'm like, what is that? And he told me all about it. And
what is it, tradesman?
They basically source and import and export ingredients, products from all around the world. He's a modern day tradesman.
Wow.
Like back in the day, they would go by ship and go to a country and find like, you know,
pomegranate. Saffron.
Yeah, saffron and bring it back. Exactly what he does. And he has been just such a kind person and super helpful in my early days. Like the type of person who I would reach out to for support and just would be so generous and help me out. And I'm trying to like repay him like, let me take you out for lunch. Let me take you out for dinner. Let me take you for drinks. I'm too busy. Can't make it, right? Well, like, oh, and then when I launched, he ordered like a package of like with beans, coffee beans, and a t-shirt, all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm texting him. I'm like, Pedro, why did you order that? I'm going to send you a package. And he was like, oh, I'm in Florida right now. And the t-shirt's going to be perfect for the weather.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Like legit, like not trying to get shit from me.
Yeah.
So
isn't it crazy that we're in a place where we feel like, I mean, obviously, like, you're a kind person, and, like, when people help you out, you want to repay them. But when people don't expect something in return, isn't it, like, surprising?
It is surprising.
Or, like, you just think twice about it. You're just like, oh, my God, what can I – because I'm the same way. I'm like, oh, my God, thank you so much. Like, here, you help me out. Let me help you out.
Yes,
and, like,
immediately.
Like, that's how I grew up.
Yes.
Yeah, my parents are in hospitality. They're like, never show up empty-handed.
Yeah.
You know, like – but that whole thing, like, sometimes it surprises me, especially in New York when people are kind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I wonder, like, so you know how that saying of, like, oh, when someone helps you out, you want to, like, return it so quickly? Like, I thought about that, too. And do you think that has anything to do with maybe, like, not getting so much of that help growing up. Like, for me, it's like I'm not used to having like abundance of resources like thrown my way, or, you know, like abundance of like even knowledge or like from other folks thrown my way. Because again, I'm the first generation born here. My parents didn't go to school. They don't have a network of people here. So I don't have a network of people here. So it's like we're all building for the first time. Yeah. So I don't know. For me, I feel like it's like the experience of not having that abundance that when you do get that given to you, like, whoa, what do I do with this?
Yeah, totally.
What do I do with this? How do I give it back?
That's actually a really good point.
Because if you're used to getting all the time, all you're gonna do is take.
That's so true.
Right. It's just like inherent. You feel entitled to it.
Yeah.
We know folks like that.
No comment. I kind of want to get into what Current Mood is about, which is about self care and mental health in an accessible Oprah way.
Yes.
This notion of hustling.
Yeah.
This like Instagram generation, and as you call it, I think hustle porn.
So bad.
Just this idea of like never not working. And I've talked about this before a little bit with my friend Anthony Denby, who was actually the first guest on Current Mood.
Mm-hmm. I listened to that episode. Shout out to Anthony.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the best.
He was the one who was about the what you know, what you don't know, and what you don't know, you don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe Bobby like resonated or like echoed some of that stuff. That definitely resonates with him. But yeah, the never not working, the like, I pull an all-nighter.
I sleep when I die. Yeah, I sleep when I die.
Yeah. Like, what is your kind of like take on that?
Yeah.
I always see you doing a lot of shit, so I'm like, this bitch is hustling.
Come on, that's just the sizzle reel.
I mean, the sizzle reel is popping. But like, does that affect you? Do you think about that? Like, what's your take?
Oh my gosh.
Tell me.
My take is that hustle porn is just terrible. And we need to stop promoting that shit.
Can you define hustle porn? What is your definition of hustle porn?
It's this idea of like your worth and your value comes from this like nonstop, unhealthy conditioning of hustling, like the whole I can sleep when I die, never not working, like I don't need to take care of myself, I'll just work myself to the ground because I'm such a hustler. Like, no, that's not okay, that's not healthy, and it's not cool. And you know what though, that used to be all me, like me in my fucking early mid 20s was all about the hustle porn. And like I used to say I'll sleep when I die, never not working. Like, I condemn it now, but I'll admit that used to be me. I didn't know any better, right? And I really got a sense of validation when people were like, you're such a hustler. I'm like, yes.
And they see me.
They see me. Like, they see me working. Like, I felt validated. And I think for me, like, honestly, a lot of that desire for validation was because I am a woman, right? And I always wanted people to recognize me and respect me for my work.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Like, so you got to do like five times as much work.
Exactly. Because, you know, this, I don't get hung up about this anymore. But when I was younger, I used to get hung up on this fear of like people discrediting me to be like, she has got that because she's cute, right?
Ugh.
Or like, she's just cute. Of course, it's easy. You know, I fucking
Guys,
hate that.
She's actually really cute. She's adorable.
What I'm talking about.
She's adorable.
That's what I'm talking about. And it's like, listen, it's five of you to acknowledge that, but don't define me by that, you know, because I didn't actually earn a work for that. You know, I'm like, thanks, mom and dad, for the jeans. You know what I mean? But I don't want people, like, that was always like this hang up of mine in my
Did that happen to you? Did that actually happen to you where people were like, were you like, felt like that?
It wasn't, I can't remember like any hard examples right now, but it's always been an insecurity of mine.
Sure.
And
I mean, a lot of women, I mean, all the time people are like accused of climbing the ranks because of their looks or because of who they're associated with or who somebody thought that they slept with or shit like that. No, actually they're really good at their job and work their way up.
And those stories are real, but at the same time, there is this messaging out there that's like, hey, women, use your sex appeal, use your looks, because that performance is actually also rewarded in the society, quote-unquote rewarded in quotes to an extent, you know, like, you get the validation, you get the followers, you get the free gear, free shit for using that sex appeal, so it's like this weird thing of like
the influencer kind of stuff?
Depending on what kind of influencer you are, but like, that behavior of using your sex to, quote-unquote, elevate or get far in life sure. is rewarded in the society to an sure. extent.
Yep.
Yeah, and like I grew up, you know, in the age of like, I mean, I grew up in the world of like community organizing, social justice, where it was all about the mind. You know, it's mm-hmm. all about mm-hmm. critical consciousness. It was all about critical thinking. So I just like was so hyper focused on having people see me for that. Mm-hmm. But anyways, back to hustle porn. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that from my mid to early to maybe even late 20s. Mm-hmm. And then I love sleep. I sleep like at least 8 hours a night.
Now that you're 72.
I'm just kidding. I know, right? It's that Asian skin.
I know, dude. You'd be like 84. I would be like, yeah, she looks great.
I'm all about health now. And my mom, too, she is such a big advocate for, like, health, you know? And mm-hmm. she always tells me, like, you need to work out more. You need to, you know, take care of your health. She's like, you don't have nothing without your health, you know? She's like,
that's a fact.
You can have all the money in the world, and you can't even do shit if you don't have your health, you know? Mm. So she's always, like, every time we talk, she's always like, how's your health? Are you working out? I'm not really, Mom, but she reminds me, and so now I'm all about, you know, hustling healthy.
Hustling healthy.
Healthy hustle.
That's what's
yeah.
up. Mm-hmm. So what
self-care.
Is... Self-care?
Yes.
What does the healthy hustle look like for you? Like, what do you do when you're, like, overwhelmed and you're hustling and you're like, oh, I gotta do all this shit, but then, like, you're also, your body's like, nope.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta admit, I don't have all the tools yet, and I'm not, like, where I wanna be in my... self-care practice.
Okay.
But I am working on it. So, for example...
That's a very honest thing to say. Thanks for yeah. sharing.
I started really committing to my morning routines. And I've been committed for, like, a few months now, so I'm proud of that progress. Like, my morning routine is now, like, I wake up, I do a cold shower every morning. I start and end cold. It really kind of helps me engage my deep breathing. It helps me get mentally strong and mentally prepared. It pushes me out of my comfort zone.
Cold showers, like really cold or, like, just...
Not lukewarm.
Not hot.
No.
Like, actually cold.
It's cold. And honestly,
that sounds terrible. The hot shower is like the best thing.
You know what's funny? Now that I've done the cold showers, when I get a hot shower, I'm like, oh, this is so uncomfortable.
Interesting.
I feel like I can't
try that.
Yeah, I'm such one of my friends put me onto it. Shout out to Abby. Like, I'm such a huge advocate for cold showers now because I've experienced so many benefits from it.
Wow.
I feel calmer. It's really helped with my stress. And it helps me get mentally prepared for the day, because you are making a commitment first thing in the morning to step out of your comfort zone and to endure something that is seemingly difficult for the benefits, because you know that it's not harmful, right? Unless it's like, unless you go out into like 5-degree weather
yeah.
or you turn your AC off before you do that,
right?
But you know, you're committing to endure something that seems difficult for the benefits. And while I'm doing it, I do my deep breathing practices, and I also do my meditation, and I recite my mantras, right? So like, self, you know, I recite affirmations and mantras to really ground myself, and so that's been great. I do that, and then I go into my stretches for the morning, which is good for my body. And then while I'm doing my stretches, I also kind of like recite my mantras and affirmations. And then I make my cup of coffee, and then I get to my desk.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty dedicated morning. So how long does that routine take?
45 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great, because I used to just like literally roll out of bed and go to my desk, is so bad.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
That's like actually not productive.
It's not. You're right.
You feel like you're, because I used to do that too. I used to like wake up in the middle of the night with one eye and just like,
it's so bad.
Look at my email, like, oh, who's emailing me right now?
It's so bad. Yeah. So I've also started practicing, you know, restraint for my phone. Like,
yeah.
At a certain time, like, stop checking your email. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're not going to write back right now. Yep. And if you check it, you're just going to feel anxious about what you need to do the next morning. So it's like really being disciplined about not checking my phone at certain hours of the day or night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually started doing that with Instagram. Mm. Instagram's a tough one for me because I have like a love-hate relationship with it. I love Instagram so much.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I've met so many people. I've been able to like build somewhat of like a really cool network there. But after a certain time, like you physically could feel ill after like scrolling, you know? So like, yeah, I've been, this past weekend, I actually like didn't look at social media for like 3 or 4 days, and I was just, I felt so much better.
Wow.
It was crazy, and it sounds like so minuscule, but
it's huge.
It for someone who's like always on, mm-hmm. it's really important. I'm going to do it all. I think I'm going to do it like every weekend.
I mean, even like the physical impacts of.
Yeah, like this.
Like the head tilt, the thumbs, the wrists. Mm-hmm. Also, do you ever think about like when we're scrolling fast, how that affects our eyes?
Yeah.
Because it's like, are my eyes registering?
No, your eyes don't actually do that.
Right. So, so now I try not to scroll. I try to like swipe one and swipe two. So
is
I
that going to help really?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying not to stress my eyes out.
I like it. I like it.
And there's like all these things where it's just like, it's because it's so new to our generation. Yeah. We don't even know what the impacts are yet. Like the longitudinal study is like happening right now.
Right.
And then when we're 80, we're like, oh, that's what's happening
to us.
That's
what's killing me. Oh, that's why my eyes are degenerating. Yeah. I can't see anything.
Yeah. I need to create some boundaries with Instagram too.
I know. It's pretty addicting.
Yeah. So you asked me earlier about like, okay, what do I do during the day? So I've really been trying to commit to like taking more breaks from my computer, for my brain, but also for my wrists. Like I do not want to deal with carpal tunnel. I try to take a break like every 30 minutes, like even if it's for like for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Just walking away has really helped. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any like tricks or like really extra weird things you do to create like more distance between yourself and your work? I know it's a weird question.
No, it's a great question.
Because we all have our weird quirky shit, right?
Do you have an example? Because I'm kind of, it's not really clear for me.
In terms of creating distance between myself and my work, I, at one point when I was like super, super connected, I would literally stash my laptop like in between like a pile of clothes in the back of my closet. So it was like really hard for me to get it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so intense.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can like say no, but if it's like out of sight, out of mind, it's kind of like where it has to be.
And then how long do you kind of put it in the little timeout?
I mean, that was just as, like, that was like on a weekend. That was like me on a weekend trying not to work, you know, like on a Sunday. I'm like, get out of here, bro. Go, you go in the corner.
You're in the corner. Timeout corner.
Yeah, timeout. But like nature is like pretty important for me. Nature vibes. Yeah, that's as far as I go. I mean, I like smoking weed.
Good one.
It helps me distance myself from my work. And then sometimes it just brings me back to my work because then I start thinking about stuff. And I'm like, oh, wait, like that's actually a fun idea. I'll like come back to it
but
later.
That's a healthy.
Yeah.
A healthy
yeah. Process, it's like just like a kind of creative thing.
I really enjoy a good cocktail.
Yeah.
I enjoy a good drink. I enjoy a good meal.
Let yourself live a little.
Yeah. Like, and at this point, like, I don't, like, again, like, moving into, like, hustling healthy, like, I don't feel guilty when I take time out. I've gotten really good with being like, I'm so overwhelmed right now. You know what? I deserve a break.
Did you used to feel guilty?
Yeah. Really? All the time. Like, I would feel so guilty if I wasn't doing stuff. I mean, honestly, I still feel guilty. It still creeps up. But I also now have moments where I'm like, you know what? I'm good for today. Like, I've done my work for today, and I will allow myself a break. Like, I can do that. Yeah, so I think just, like, I like to carve time out to enjoy a good drink and a good meal, whether that's at home or outside.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. So what are you looking forward to?
In the world?
In your life.
In my life. Yeah. In my life. Such a big question.
I know.
What am I looking forward to? You know, I'm really looking forward to this next stage of New York Coffee Supply, where I'm looking to scale. You know, I'm looking to grow my product line. I'm looking to grow my team. I'm looking to grow my distribution. I'm looking to grow the narrative. That's something I'm really looking forward to. I'm looking forward to spending more time with my family.
Yeah.
I don't really know how. Like, I mean, we have a trip planned for San Francisco end of the month, which I'm excited about.
Nice.
But, you know, I don't see them as much as I'd like to. My parents live in Boston. I live in New York. And then my sister lives in SF. And then another one lives in Rhode Island. I'm just looking forward to, like, all the new challenges and experiences that I know are right in front of me. Mm-hmm. You know, I think building a business, like you said earlier, where the path is so unknown, mm-hmm. like, I love that shit. You know, mm-hmm. like, I hate predictability, and I also hate limitations of, like, nice. Whether it's, like, the limitation on your check for the week. You know, I hate caps, right? I don't like that feel. I don't like anyone trying to set a cap on me or my potential.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of that comes from me trying to break out of the whole model minority myth.
I hear you.
Yeah, so I just love exploring, like, that unknown territory. And so I think there's a lot of that with Noon Coffee Supply and yeah. the coming up. So that's what I'm looking forward to, just like new experiences and new challenges and also new lessons.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming to Current Mood.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. That was so much fun. We're done?
I know, we're done.
Oh, that's it? Yeah. Hi, G-Reel. Shout out to G-Reel, number one editor. I love you.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to Current Mood on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and Anchor and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Also, join us on Instagram for some super cool visuals at currentmood.io. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And if you really feel like reaching out, send a message. Tell us what you are feeling, please. Thanks so much.